The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If the opposition can't smell blood this year, we're as well pack it in, because even if Comerford's kickouts are as good as Cluxton's, every team is taking a step forward.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Martin Lipton, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Football writer with The Sun, and looking ahead, obviously, to, we're all obsessed by this on both sides of the water, what's going to happen on Sunday night. We had you on a few weeks ago, and I asked you a question about Gareth Southgate and what level he was at. Aston Villa was your response. Is that on the up? Has he moved further up the table now since what's going on over the last couple of weeks?
Hopefully, yes. But I wouldn't say that it's assuring that a big six club would take him, because they don't tend to appoint English managers. Because none of them, apart from Spurs, are run by people who have any knowledge of English football. And it's purely about, you know, the best they can get. And often those best aren't English. I think what Southgate has proven without question is that he's an outstanding manager of this group of players. He has shown tactical flexibility. He has shown maturity, and he's shown intelligence. And that's not always been the case for English managers.
One of the biggest talking points that lead into this game is, what does football coming home actually mean? Is it to do with 66, or is it to do with England inventing the game?
No, it's about a yearning to watch an England team that's any good. For years and years, they've been rubbish. It's wish fulfilment. It's like singing, "We're by far the greatest team the world has ever seen," when you support Sheffield Wednesday. It's not real. It's a song. It has got no relevance outside that yearning. It harks back to the fact that England are rubbish. England's going to throw it away, going to blow it away. That's what it's about. We all know what happens in the end. We're not very good.
It sounds like you're saying that fans sing this ironically. Like, it doesn't feel like that when you're watching it.
No, but that doesn't matter. That's what the song was about. You asked me what the song was about. The fact that people take it in different ways is fine. People do interpret things differently. You can interpret one passage of Shakespeare seven different ways. I mean, it's up to you, isn't it?
Good comparison.
This is better than Shakespeare, you know. Martin.
Pardon?
This is better than Shakespeare.
I wouldn't say so, to be honest. Although there's drama, there's pathos, there's humour. Yeah, maybe there's a comparison there. Not sure there's too much blank verse. There's been plenty of blank verse written about it, man.
So you're telling us then that it has already come home, is what you're saying, that there is already a team that England can be proud of.
Without question. Look, this may sound really stupid, and I certainly don't think they're going to win on Sunday. I think they can win. I think after 2018, I believed and said that this was not going to be a one-off, that the quality of players coming through meant that for a period of time, England were going to be serious and genuine contenders for major honours. I've seen nothing over the last few weeks to change that view. If anything, it's strengthened and intensified, because if you look at the squad, the players who are not in the team yet but will be regularly, the Sakas and Sanchos and Bellinghams, in addition to Kane, who's still only 27, 28, Sterling still in his prime. You know, the best players have got a few years more in them, and the ones who are going to improve the team, Foden and other, are just at the beginning.
It's an amazing time to be coming to form. That's exactly the sort of situation you want to be in, given the proximity of the next World Cup. But when it comes to this Sunday, Martin, if you had to pick one area, and this can be down to England or down to Italy, what worries you more than anything else?
The Italy are really good. Italy have been the best team in the tournament, without question. They have been hampered by the loss of the left wing back. That was a real blow for them. Donnarumma's not made a mistake. He's been absolutely outstanding. Chiellini and Bonucci at the back are rock hard. Verratti can pass you to death. All of the strikers look like they've got a goal in them. What isn't there to be scared of? You know, yeah. I mean, they're a really, really good team. But so are England. The first test England had in adversity was on Wednesday night, and they came through it. But they will have to, in the words of the likes of Capello and co, suffer to win this match. They will not win this match easily. It will be won by the finest of margins, by the team that has a decision that goes their way, or has a bit of luck, or has a bit of, you know, or does something out of this world. Because when good teams meet, it is tough. What, you know, the other semi-final between two outstanding teams, and Spain were brilliant, the better team on the day, they lost. Because football is not a perfect match. Actually, its imperfection is what is its perfection in many ways. You don't, the best team doesn't always win. In most sports, the best team will win. That's not always the case in football.
On the point about having to sort of suffer for your art or suffer to win this thing, I was interested to see, everybody was interested to see once England conceded or once they went behind, which obviously we have evidence of in the Denmark game, and they got it back to 1-1. Is there a concern that it still needed the dodgy penalty, Martin, regardless of whether it was or it wasn't, but is there a concern that that incisiveness that we all thought was there from Sterling's direct running or however it came about, everybody assumed that actually they would have the capacity to get themselves back from 1-0 down, but that they needed that penalty ultimately in the end to get past Denmark. Is that concerning?
Who cares? Honestly,
I don't mean about the right or wrong of the penalty. I mean in terms of looking at the Italy game.
Because it isn't supposed to be easy. You don't score 4 and 5 in games. You know, Italy have had their moments of fortune in games to win.
I mean more. Is there a concern that England aren't as incisive as everybody thought or thinks they are?
Well, and they create loads of chances. They're, you know, I think it's a rather limited value concept, but the expected goal was a 3-0 win. They just, you know, Schmeichel made a couple of massive saves. Sterling should score before the first goal. Maguire's save header was a great effort. There's a miss hit by Kane in front of goal. And if you're talking about penalties, what about the penalty that Kane should have had in the second half, which was a clear penalty, not given? These things happen. You get on with it. There's no point in moaning. Yeah. They've scored, what is it now, 11 goals, 13 goals and conceded one. I think that's all right. You know, it's not as if they're in a terrible mess. They've scored enough goals to win every game. You only have to score one more than the opposition.
Yeah. And Italy are obviously current masters at all.
They're a really good team. They're great. I mean, I think Chiesa's got better and better with his strength as the tournament's gone on. And whoever he plays, whether it's Belotti or, you know, they're all good players. Immobile, the most inaptly named footballer of all time, because he really is he's a very clever, skillful mover. You know, there isn't a weakness in that team at all. Jorginho has been excellent for them, setting the tone. There is the danger for England that Italy just don't let them have the ball, as happened in 2012 when Pirlo embarrassed England, and that was a 0-0 draw. England could have won that. They were played off the park, and it goes to a penalty shootout. No one was saying then, oh, Italy didn't show enough quality in the final third. It was Italy passed England to death and deservedly won.
Yeah. I'm interested, Martin, as somebody who covers and supports Tottenham quite a bit, about the development of Harry Kane throughout this tournament. Because at the start, there was question marks about his positioning. Why is Harry Kane dropping so deep? We need him closer to goal. But the other night, we saw exactly why he drops deep. And the amount of creation of chances, the three expected goals, as you mentioned there, is down in large part to Harry Kane and a deeper position at times.
Yeah, because he's an outstanding player. He just didn't start very well. Well, guess what? It happens. No one can play brilliantly every game. The reality is, if you give Harry Kane six or seven games on the spot, on the trot, he's probably going to score 4 or 5 goals, even if he's not playing well. As it happens, once he got one, you can see the change in him. In fact, it was before that. He got kicked and was limping against Germany. And it almost seems like it shook him back into being Harry Kane again. But what he always does is, as a rule, is occupy defenders. And that the first goal on Wednesday, that pass, there are very few players in the world who can make that pass, even fewer centre-forwards who can make that pass. Kane is one of them. But it's a pass he's made all season for Spurs. That's why he's created so many goals for Son and others, because he drops into space. And if you let him go, he kills you. And if you don't let him go, he kills you. That's how good a player he is.
And doesn't matter then which player he's passing to in that scenario, because it seemed to me that himself and Saka had a great understanding. Similarly, though, you could see any of England's attackers on that right flank, and you could see Kane getting them the ball.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they've got the pace to get there, yes, and they all got the pace to get there. That could have been Sancho, it could have been Sterling, it could have been Foden, probably couldn't have been Grealish, because he couldn't get there. But of the others, they're so fleet of foot that once their ball is played, you're begging them to deliver. But he knows where that ball's going. Now, that's a No, let's be honest, so will Italy. They'll be aware of that ball. But they did defend slightly deeper than you expected. And that was a mistake. And if they repeat that, then that gives England potential to hurt them, in, because you know that Sterling will drop into that little pocket as well. So England have got some significant armoury, but obviously the heavy gun is Harry Kane.
Jamie Carragher was making the point in the Telegraph this morning, Martin, that possible England win might be good news for Tottenham fans in that it might quench a bit of Harry Kane's thirst to leave the club. Is there anything in that, or what do you now expect to happen?
Nothing happens unless someone puts the money on the table. I don't think anyone's going to pay 150 million. Therefore, he doesn't go anywhere.
Mm.
Because Daniel Levy will believe and calculate that with 3 years on his contract, he can get that next year with 2 years on his contract in a more buoyant market.
Mm. Is the appointment, when last we had you on, we were talking about Conte, Zinedine Zidane and all these unbelievable names that were being linked with Tottenham, and you've ended up, the club have ended up with Nuno Espirito Santo. What's the view on that? Like, is it too much to read into Harry Kane's, how much that impacts on Harry Kane's thinking?
I don't think it matters at all. It's purely on Daniel Levy's thinking.
Mm.
It will help if they can get on if he stays. And if they can't, it'll make it easier for Kane to say, look, time's up. But I don't think Kane wants to win stuff, but he also recognises he's got a contract. And unless someone comes in and pays the money, he goes nowhere. I don't think anyone comes in and pays the money. Therefore, the manager is almost irrelevant in that regard, because the manager is just another employee. In fact, the manager gets paid less than Kane does. So.
Yeah.
Does winning the Euros on Sunday quench his thirst for trophies?
No, it'll just make it stronger.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Because once you've got one, you always want another one, don't you? You know, it's like an alcoholic. You can't have one drink. You know, you've got to have the next one. For Kane, the next one, it may be that England ends up satisfying his quest for trophies. But I don't think it will.
One more on Harry Kane for me. I was listening to Ray Parler on Talk Sports this morning. They were talking about Harry Kane is a great player because he draws loads of frees. Italy are a bunch of divers.
Well, they're not. Every team's a bunch of divers. Kane gets free kicks because he protects the ball and gets fouled. He buys free kicks. There were two on Wednesday where he takes the ball wide, invites the challenge.
Yeah.
That is going to be given by every referee in every country in the world.
Is the inviting the challenge of buying a free kick not just a euphemism for diving?
No, because it's a foul. If you get the challenge comes in and they kick you before, it's a foul. Mm. You're not allowed to do that. It's, yeah, when other players do it, that's clever play. When English players do it, oh, it's cheating. No, it's football.
Yeah. The point is, diving
and taking contact. Diving is when there's no contact.
Well, technically you can have both. There can be a little bit of contact and you can dive, which I think is what's happening with Harry Kane.
Well, you tell me which one of them weren't fouls.
Look, technically they are fouls, of course.
No. Which one of them weren't fouls in your mind?
No, what I'm saying is technically...
Tell me, give me the examples of the ones that weren't fouls.
Technically they are fouls, but also...
No. Therefore, if they're technically fouls...
My point is that Harry Kane could definitely have stayed on his feet.
No. If they're technically fouls, take out technically. They're fouls. You just said it yourself.
But my point being that he could stay on his feet. Do you not think he could stay on his feet for a lot of the challenges he goes down for?
If you're fouled... the problem is, unfortunately in football, if you don't go down and you foul, you don't get the free kick.
Mm.
So you take the foul. And there was one where he was cleaned out and the fellow was a horrific foul by the Danish fella on the England right. You know, he didn't start getting up and throwing imaginary cards around Kane. He never has and never will.
Mm.
When have you seen him ever do that? Now, that's cheating. He never does that.
Mm. We'd spoken before as well about the particularly pre-tournament, the game in Middlesbrough with that booing of the taking the knee and how that might impact on the relationship, whether it would create a chasm between the fans and the players. It doesn't seem necessarily, and I don't know, Martin, maybe in the course of the next 5 or 6 years, in the cool light of several autobiographies, we get more of an insight into what the players are thinking about that. But it doesn't seem like that's created a chasm. What is the relationship like between the fans and the players now?
Well, at the moment, it's outstanding. What I would say is the idiots who booed sounded a lot louder when there was no one in the ground. When there's a bigger crowd applauding and cheering, and the vast majority are, nobody even notices it. And the players know that the vast majority of supporters are backing them on this, and that's great. And it's very interesting that the GB women who are going to Tokyo are going to do exactly the same thing, which includes, of course, two Scots and a Welsh girl, because they believe it's about equality.
Yeah.
The players believe it's about equality, and the vast majority of the supporters understand that. And those who don't want to. These are the people who can impugn the motives of other people. But if you question their motives, they get the raging hump. Let's be honest. Why are they booing those few people? I'll tell you why. Because they are racists. And they're finding a justification for it by claiming it's about politics. Well, if the players say it's not about politics, then it's not about politics. It is about equality. And the vast majority of people in this country, I think, understand that.
Yeah.
Particularly the younger people, they very much understand it.
The unfortunate point is, and like you're right, obviously the vast majority of people aren't. It feels like it's certainly, I mean, at the very minimum, a very, very vocal minority. Like, they are loud, and they are embarrassing the country with this action. They're going to embarrass the country by booing, I'm assuming, the Italian national anthem on Sunday.
Yeah, that for me is worse, because more people do that, and I've always found it despicable. But I don't know what I can do about it. To be fair, other countries boo the anthems as well. The British anthem gets booed plenty of places.
I don't remember.
I've heard it.
Have you seen it?
I think it's. Look, I don't even sing the anthem because I'm a Republican, so it doesn't really bother me too much. But
listen, we're all in the same boat on that front.
But what I would say is, I always respect the anthem, and I think everyone should. But I can't do any. I don't think anyone can stop it. Unfortunately, you can make as many pleas as you want. The FA do it all the time, and no one, and too few of them listen, because I'm afraid that some of them are idiots.
Yeah,
simple as that.
Is he going to go same again, or in terms of the Saka versus Foden versus Grealish conversation, how is he going to go on team selection?
I wouldn't be shocked if he started Foden. I think he might feel that someone with that technical ability might drag them out a bit. But also, we know he'll make changes. I mean, the other thing is that if it's Emerson at left back, who does he want to play against least? That will be part of the thinking as well.
And the outcome?
Oh, penalties, obviously.
If it goes that far, Martin, can I ask you on that? If it goes that far, the Kane, I was interested to hear Kane after the game the other night talk about the penalty miss in such detail, saying that he went lower than he thought it was going to go, which was a bit of a red flag in terms of a mindset of a penalty taker. I mean, I know what you're going to say, given everything you've said about Harry Kane over the last while, but if it goes that far, you're not concerned about Harry Kane, I'm assuming, and... And England to get it done if it goes that far?
It's not a lottery, because it's about keeping your head under pressure, but it's about who wins. You know, it's as simple as a test of 10 people and the goalkeepers. Yeah. You cannot predict the outcome of a penalty shootout unless it's against Germany. but, you know, Italy have won and lost penalty shootouts. England have won and lost penalty shootouts. The one difference now is that England aren't scared of a penalty shootout anymore. It doesn't mean they win it, but they're no longer scared of it because they've won two on the spin. And as for Kane, you would always have Harry Kane taking a penalty. Hmm. He's missed four in his career, and he's taken about 40. That'll do.
It's coming home is what I'm feeling, and I'm all behind it. Martin, we'll catch up to you hopefully again soon. Always a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Bye-bye.